It's the top of the hour. This is Thursday, January the 5th, 2012. The radio program is on the air. Now on radio. Oh, yeah. It's a miracle. We did 2 hours on TV. We are live on the Fan Radio Network coast to coast on Sirius and on Sportsnet in high definition. Bob McCown with John Shannon in our Toronto studios. Later, the president and of the CHL, commissioner of the OHL, David Branch, will join us. And Cecil Fielder, the former Blue Jay, father of Prince. They are at least partially estranged. We're going to ask about it. I don't know whether they don't talk at all or don't talk much or...
I've heard conflicting things.
Well, we're gonna try and find out what's going on, and does he have a place in Prince's life, and what does he know about his son's plans for the future?
I was told once at a batting cage in Milwaukee this year, somebody mentioned Cecil's name, and Prince turned around and was talking quite openly and positively about his father.
Well, I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
Let's hope that is the situation. Is Mr. Banks with us now? Here's our friend Don Banks of SI. Hello, Banks. How are you?
Hi, guys. Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you. Now, I know it is our mandate, and we want to talk about the upcoming postseason. However, we got into a conversation yesterday about Peyton Manning.
Correct.
And his future.
Yeah.
Manning clearly, it is believed, will not be back in Indianapolis. Do you concur with that? First of all.
No, not necessarily. I think Jim Irsay wants him back. I think Jim Irsay is going to lean his way, if at all possible. Everything I hear out of Jim Irsay is that if he's healthy, Peyton Manning has a role as a Colts quarterback next year. I think there are a lot of parts of this story we just simply can't answer until we know if his neck responds in the next couple months before that $28 million bonus is due. But I do not put Peyton Manning with one foot out of town at this point. Not yet.
Well, there are those who do. I will tell you. We talked to one yesterday who believes that Peyton Manning will not be back, not necessarily because of the neck, but because of the $28 million that is due and the cap hit that the Colts would incur.
And they can get Andrew Luck.
And they can get Andrew Luck, and they believe that Andrew Luck should be like any other first-round NFL draft choice quarterback, should play and not sit and watch.
Right.
So if that's a long premise, but if in fact Peyton Manning is not back, one of the suggestions has been Denver. Does that make any sense to you?
Makes sense from a standpoint that John Elway is looking for a pocket passer, I believe, to build his team's future offense around. It makes sense from a standpoint that I think John Fox and John Elway would probably be a fairly attractive tandem for Peyton Manning. I really do think this is cart before the horse. I think we got a long way to go. I don't know who you talk to, obviously, and I don't know if they know something or if they were just putting two and two together. There's a lot of dots that can be connected, you know, on talk radio and in print. But I just think until I hear Jim Irsay say something markedly different, everything he has said about the matter has left the door open. In fact, I think Bill Polian and Chris Polian are no longer in the organization, in part because I think Jim Irsay felt that they were not where he is on this topic exactly, and I think he's pretty clear about trying to make it work if Manning is healthy, at least short term, potentially even with Andrew Luck in town as well.
But not telling stories out of school. It was Bob Kravitz of the Indianapolis Star.
Yeah, I know Bob. I love his work. We were friends. I just don't interpret Irsay's comments the same way, I guess, as he does.
Right. Is there, if not Denver, is there another obvious place that you could see Manning going? And I said to John yesterday and to Bob, too, I said, you know, I'll bet there's 20 teams that would at least take a serious look at bringing Peyton Manning in.
I don't see Peyton Manning and Rex Ryan being a great mix, but I think the Jets would be aggressive in coming after him and trying to sell Peyton Manning on 2 or 3 years as a Jets quarterback.
So they've given up.
We saw what they've done in the past with Brett Favre. I don't think it's out of the realm at all to think that regime might not despite their denials on that front, might have a little dance away from Mark Sanchez and go for a plan B.
Now that you've talked to the Jets, Don, when does Brian Schottenheimer get some criticism in all this?
You know, there are two trains of thought within the league. One is that he's done pretty doggone well taking Mark Sanchez, a pretty middle-of-the-road quarterback with limitations and turnover issues, and getting to the AFC title game the last two seasons before this one. The other train of thought within the league is that he's not the best play caller, and he has at times forgotten what the Jets do well at the wrong moment, i.e. 59 passes a few weeks ago in a game they had to win at home against the Giants. I think the truth is somewhere in between. Brian Schottenheimer's name actually has surfaced in at least one opening. I want to say it's Miami, but it could be Jacksonville, head coach opening. I do think at some point he will be a head coach in this league. I don't know how much of the blame really should lie with him or obviously a toxic locker room in New York this year, and a major regression, I think, from Mark Sanchez in terms of his third year development.
Well, I don't see how you take your starting quarterback for the last 2 years and put him on the bench and keep him in the organization. And I think the same is true with Tebow in Denver, and I said so yesterday.
Yeah, you did.
If you bring Peyton Manning in to either of those two situations, you have to get rid of either Sanchez or Tebow.
Most likely, I agree with that. I don't think it ever really works.
Doesn't work.
I think they need a plan B on the Sanchez front. I don't think they know what it is yet.
Right.
So they're not going to say anything against Sanchez in case they have to be wedded to him for a fourth season as a starter.
With Don Banks of SI, let's get to the four games we have this weekend. Let's start with the Sunday night game. It's Pittsburgh-Denver because we were talking about Tebow. Under normal circumstances, you wouldn't give Denver a hope in hell, I don't think. But I watched the Steelers against the Browns in the last week, and they were singularly unimpressive. And, I mean, they are banged up. Their record, I mean, is pretty solid. But does Denver have any chance in this game?
Well, they do because they have a defense.
Right.
Pittsburgh hasn't played very well on the road this year. They also have averaged 14.3 points a game their last four games. They're not clicking offensively. Now, some of that, obviously, Roethlisberger injury didn't play the 1 week, somewhat limited in mobility even for him. But, you know, when they get that passing game going, they're dangerous. I just think Denver has a chance in the game if they can muster anything in the first half offensively, points-wise, and in terms of a passing game. Because the longer it goes with Denver scoring 3 or 6 points, it's going to look awful like last week's almost unwatchable 7-3 loss to Kansas City.
Cincinnati-Houston, at least half of that is an unlikely scenario. Maybe both. I know that a lot of people thought at the beginning of the year thought Houston might be a comer, and I think they were proven right. Houston was a much better football team, an improving football team, and a team good enough to make the postseason. Cincinnati was supposed to win 3 or 4 games this year.
All right.
And now they find themselves in the postseason. So in some ways, you have two rather unlikely teams. Houston's never been to a postseason. Cincinnati's been, remarkably, a few times in the last decade. But, boy, they've had a lot of really bad seasons in between.
And have not won a postseason game since the 1990 postseason, I might add.
Thank you very much.
And the city of Houston hasn't won one since the 91 Oilers won a game. So it's been a long drought for both of these cities. I'll say this. I think the Bengals are playing somewhat with house money. They weren't expected to be here. They went 0-4 down the stretch against Baltimore and Pittsburgh. They went, I believe, 1-6 against teams with winning records this year. They've simply beaten the teams they should beat. They're 8-1 against teams at 500 or below, with the only loss being to Denver in week 2. I actually like Cincinnati in this game because I think Houston, to me, is the telltale signs of a team that kind of peaked too early, and it will probably look a little bit like the glad to be here, happy, the pressure's off, we made the playoffs, woo-hoo. It certainly has been the case the last 3 weeks with a 3-game losing streak, and I think Cincinnati in some ways has the ability to play loose and effectively Saturday afternoon.
Detroit-New Orleans. If this was week four, boy, this would be an interesting football game. But it's week 18 or 19 or whatever the hell it is. And I don't see Detroit being competitive with the New Orleans Saints. Do you?
Again, I think I like them a little bit more than most people. They didn't have Ndamukong Suh when they went in there, I think, in week 14. They were a little banged up. I think Detroit's playing pretty well, as we saw last week in Green Bay on offense. I think it'll be a game for a while. I picked New Orleans to win. I don't think it's going to be the one-sided affair that New Orleans has had the last few weeks, notably against Atlanta on a couple Monday nights ago. I think Detroit's going to hang tough, and they're going to trade punches for three quarters.
Well, I would say if you were a betting man, this is the bet of the year, is this game over.
Yeah.
I don't care what the line is, over anything. 80, 90, I don't care what you hang up, over. Going to be a lot of points.
It could be a 4.5-hour game. It could easily go into Sunday morning on the East Coast, at least in that TV audience.
100-99 is what I'm
predicting. See, the thing that I like about the Lions is I think Matthew Stafford has gotten better as the season's gone on. He hasn't hit a wall. He even his early season injuries, he's the last 3 weeks he's thrown the ball really well.
I totally agree with that, Mr. Shannon. I think the Oakland comeback win was a really signature moment for him, and I thought what he did, you know, against Green Bay last week kept his game, you know, punch for punch with the Packers offense, even if it was Matt Flynn.
Yeah.
I think he's playing his best ball at the right time. That's why I think Detroit's going to be in this game.
Atlanta and the Giants. On one hand, I couldn't care less, and I'm not sure either team deserves to be there. On the other hand, maybe these are two teams that really are pretty good that just underachieved over the course of the season and maybe about to emerge. I don't know what to expect with this one.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. They both underachieved to a degree. They didn't play well until they absolutely had to. I like the Falcons a little bit more. I think they've played really well offensively the last month, and I think it's their time to win a playoff game. I think they understand that they can't go one and done for a third time in the four-year Mike Smith's Matt Ryan era. I think they have the pressure on them to put together a good postseason performance, and I think Matt Ryan is ready to take that step. The Giants, to me, if the Falcons get the crowd out of the game early, we've seen the Giants go completely flat a few times in the second half of the season at home, like the Redskins did to them. And I think Atlanta has and enough balance between Michael Turner and getting more out of Julio Jones and Roddy White and Gonzalez at tight end. I like Atlanta to win this game, find a way.
You think they can manage the Giants' defensive line?
That is the big question. I mean, when the Giants have the pass rush going, everybody looks pretty bad against them. And if they can get after Matt Ryan the way they did against Aaron Rodgers in week 14, it could be clear-cut advantage for the Giants, and they could roll downhill. But I think Atlanta is going to counter that, and I think Atlanta, you know, what's funny, watch for the two-minute offense. Matt Ryan, the two-minute this year, has been exceptional. If Mike Mularkey, the offensive coordinator, is smart, he'll have him in it early and often.
We know you got to scoot. We thank you as always, and enjoy week one of the postseason. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys.
Don Banks of SI joining us. Who do you like in these games? Cincinnati, Houston?
I like Cincinnati. I like Andy Dalton. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he'll be the difference. The fact is, how many quarterbacks do you need in Houston? I mean, I saw Jake Delhomme finish game.
You only need one that's any good.
And Dalton's the best of anybody playing in that game.
I'm shocked Cincinnati didn't go 2-14.
I just don't believe it.
I'm not buying into it. I think Houston. I don't like Houston particularly, but I think Houston has upside there. I think Houston has a chance to be a real comer. Mm-hmm. Houston wins that game.
Okay.
Detroit, New Orleans.
Oh, and I think New Orleans wins in a walk.
In a walk. I don't buy. I mean, well, it might be 100-99, but it'd be a lot of points.
No, but it could be 50-35.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big number, I think.
Yeah.
Atlanta and the Giants.
I like the Giants. I think we talked about the defensive line. I think their offensive line. And I think that the other Manning is a pretty good quarterback. I think Eli has earned his stripes this year.
I don't like Eli Manning. I don't like any guy that thinks he's a top five quarterback when he's not even close to a top five quarterback. And so I'm going to root for Atlanta, even though I could care less about Atlanta. I think. If the Falcons, I think, and Banks said this to some extent, this is the year for the Falcons. If this doesn't work, mm-hmm. all they wind up being is a half decent football team.
Yeah, I just like the Giants, and I like their two running backs versus the Falcons' one running back.
Pittsburgh, Denver.
Oh, I think Pittsburgh gonna walk too. I just cannot see. I mean, Tebow went 6 for 22 last week. He'll go five for 25 this week.
Pittsburgh against a 4-win Cleveland Brown team who didn't even have their starting quarterback. Not that that means anything, because he wasn't that good either.
But they had played everybody. Pittsburgh had nothing to play for.
Yes, they did. They had a divisional championship that was at stake until late in the game.
Yep.
They did, and they played everybody. Everybody played every minute.
Pittsburgh
Palamalu played, and
Pittsburgh
everybody played.
Pittsburgh gonna walk.
They didn't look very good. I hate Denver, but yeah. I mean, another Tebow miracle. Don't be surprised. When we come back, David Branch, president of the Canadian Hockey League and commissioner of the OHL, talks to us about, the kids and fighting and the Joel Junior Championship and a bunch of stuff when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. The radio program continues on the Fan Radio Network, coast to coast on Sirius. What channel on Sirius?
157.
Thank you. And on Sportsnet in high definition around the world. Cecil Fielder a little bit later on. First, here's the president of the Canadian Hockey League and commissioner of the OHL, David Branch, who I assume is at the World Junior Tournament. Mr. Branch?
Hi, Robert. Great to be with you and John, and Happy New Year, by the way.
I assume you're at the game this afternoon?
Yes, and I didn't go to the games in Edmonton. I was down to Windsor for a little while to watch the World Under 17 Challenge, and joined up with all the action in Calgary on New Year's Day. So it's been an exciting time. It's been a great experience, and it's been a real challenging and difficult one for the team. But I just love the way they showed up today to compete and make us proud.
Boy, we lost to the Russians in the under 17 too, Dave.
Yeah, that was a 4-3 overtime loss. And let me put my coach's hat on. Five OHL Team Ontario players were out of the lineup. They were short bench, but they played their hearts out. And it was great to see that at the end of the day, the Russians turn around, beat Team USA 7-4 to win the gold. So that just shows you where we were with Team Ontario.
A sense, I don't know if you're around the kids at all, but how do a bunch of kids feel about winning a bronze medal? I mean, it's, you know, better than not winning a bronze medal, I guess, but, you know, happy but muted happiness?
I think that's a good way to describe it, Bob. I mean, we've all seen it, and I think it's one of the strengths of the program, quite frankly, where it's not about medaling, it's about, you know, capturing the gold.
Right.
And the kids come with that in mind, as do the coaches, and Don Hay and his people did a fabulous job, I thought, as other staffs have done. And that's the culture. That's what it's all about in this great hockey-crazy country of ours.
How do you examine the 6-5 loss, Dave? Do we need to do anything? Are we on the right track? Are you happy with where this program is compared to where it should be? We've lost to the Russians 2 years in a row now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need a summit, John, if that's what you're asking.
Darn. So,
I think we're in great shape. And I mean, this may sound, a little defensive, but when I look at the last 2 years, I really think...
Two weird games, huh?
Yeah, you take away two periods, and we might have two goals. And that does show you how close the competition is. I just think, yes, you've got to continue to challenge and tweak to make sure that you can, be as competitive as possible. And we'll go through a debriefing process, as we always do, Hockey Canada, led by Bob Nicholson. And the three league commissioners will meet with the coaches, the support staff, and go through it with a fine tooth comb, you might say, and just see what we can learn from this experience.
I know you don't want to step on Nick's toes or anybody at Hockey Canada, but I'm just as a comment. Is the selection process okay? Is there anything you'd like to see tweaked?
No, we're in this together. It's a great partnership. I think we all have our views. At the end of the day, we all hold hands. And I think that's been the beauty of the program, is that we do challenge ourselves. And then at the end of the day, we come together. And I think the results have been extremely positive, Bob. And I know Bob and I just quickly chatted after losing to the Russians. But at the end of the day, too, we always look at each other and say, you know what? You got to give it 24 hours, and then you come back to the board and see how we best go forward.
You know, I saw you on the broadcast being interviewed, and you answered quite eloquently about this question, and it's a question that has to be asked all the time, unfortunately, is that the CHL has become a great producer of talent from Europe as well with your two import system. Do you see that changing at all? Are you concerned about helping other nations improve their hockey at the expense of positions that could be helping Canadian players?
I know that's a question that comes at us, as you've already said, John, in many different ways. It's like saying, do we have coaching clinics for them? Do we help their officials program? Do we help them promote the game? And I think the answer is yes, because the more people that play the game, the more we can promote our game around the world. At the end of the day, the better our game is. There is a fine line as to the number of players that we do have. I know playing among the CHL teams, and it's really interesting. There's a mixed reaction among the European federations. There's some real strong opinions about, hey, it hurts our development at home. And then there's those that value the opportunity for kids to come over, play, and then when they come back to their home federation, help grow and develop the game. But I think an area that I know we've talked about is goaltending. And because there's only two goalies per team, should we as the CHL look at not allowing maybe any import player to be a goalie? Because we all, I think, recognize that the Europeans have done a fabulous job in that area of developing goalies. That used to be their weakness. That used to be our strength. So now that's one area that we are certainly challenging ourselves on, John.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, there are, I think, 13 CHL teams that have first-string goalies from Europe of the 52 teams. And it puts an interesting spin on that actual position.
No, without question, and we recognize that, and that's part of our challenge going forward, without question.
Yeah, but if you're going to let them in, I mean, is it fair to punish goaltenders, you know? Well, I mean, I think that's got to be part of the equation, too. I don't know what the answer is.
But is it fair proportionally not to give the opportunity to Canadian goaltenders?
Well, then then let's go all the way down the line. Then let's not let anybody who's not a Canadian play in the Canadian Hockey League. Let's eliminate American players, too. You ready to do that?
No, because we have teams based in the United States.
Well, let them have all American players. I mean, look, you know,
it's
we can
nice
go
you
round
to,
and
nice
we
you to go, join in on this one, Dave.
Well,
thanks.
We can go round and round in circles. Look, I'm not pro European guys, but I also I find it distasteful whenever we bring up the issue of, because European goaltenders, you know, we're fostering and encouraging European goaltenders who come back and bite us in the ass in the World Juniors. Maybe we shouldn't have European goaltenders. Well, that's
Bob, this is only coming because we lost the other night. You know that as well as I do.
Well, of course. It's the annual navel gazing.
Sure.
You know, when you lose, right?
Yeah.
The world is falling apart when you lose the World Junior Championship, and everything's fine, and we've, you know, ho-hum, we've kicked their ass again when we win.
There you go. Bob talked on the show yesterday about the whole relationship with Russia next summer. What's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, it is an ambitious program, and Bob's done a great job, I feel, of fostering relationships with the Russian Federation. It feeds into our international series. I know it's also, you know, they're looking at the Olympics and everything else, and it's all part of a big plan to hopefully see the game continue to grow, particularly in Russia. They've had their challenges. You wouldn't know it the last couple of years. But it's good for hockey once again. I'm back to that. We're looking forward to having our training camp over there in August and having the games there and then back home. And other plans are in place as well as we move forward to celebrate 40 years, which is hard to imagine, of since the 72 series that we all remember so fondly.
All right, I got something that just popped into my head.
Here we go.
Well, you know what? I mean, in 35 years of doing this program, it's hard for me to come up with questions I've never asked somebody before, and especially when it's Branch, because I've had, I don't know how many times Branch and I have been together. But here's one for you, Branch. So you got how many team? How many major junior teams do you have in the CHL? 60?
Correct.
And you have this issue with European players, apparently, that I don't think you have, but you think you have.
Oh, I didn't say I did. Those are challenges that are coming at us.
All right.
You know.
Well, you got to slap those people around, first of all.
Okay.
So, but boy, he's getting easy now.
Yeah,
isn't
I know.
And in the midst of all this, we have all these professional leagues looking at the future of Europe. And is the NFL going to go? Is the NBA going to go? Is baseball going to go to Central America and to the Far East? And is hockey going to go to put franchises in Europe? Have you looked at the possibility of doing an international junior league?
Well, not in real structured terms, Bob. But it's It's a great comment and question. I can tell you that Mr. Medvedev has extended a personal invitation to myself to come over in August with Bob Nicholson because they have started a junior league. They want to develop relationships there. It's premature. I can't name the team, but we have, as it turns out, an OHL club team that we'll be announcing shortly that's going over to a tournament in Russia at the end of August, first part of September as well, which is the first time this has ever happened. And so we're starting to see, and just being with some of the federations the last week in Calgary, that appears definitely to be a want and in some of our minds a need as we move forward. So it's there's some exciting opportunities, and we're just on the surface of really starting to drill down in those areas, Bob.
So maybe in the worst case scenario, or not the worst case scenario, but in the least impactful scenario, there is a European Junior League that doesn't exist right now that is formed, and that somehow the Memorial Cup champions play, God knows when they do it, August, would play the European Junior Champions. John is looking somewhat chagrined.
Well, I just timing.
You're
timing,
not constipated at all.
No, timing would be the key with everything else that goes on after the Memorial Cup.
I mean, that's the problem.
It almost would have to be in during junior camps in August, September.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly what John has hit upon too, Bob, is one of the challenges. But hey, if there's a will, there's a way. And let's not lose sight of maybe not looking across the pond, just south of us as well. Our friends.
I was going to mention that. Hockey. How do you crack that wall? Because, that's not easy. Do you play against the U.S. Junior League guys, or could you have a game against college players?
Well,
college players are up to 22 years old.
You can't right now.
Yeah. You can't right now. The NCAA wouldn't let you.
Well, they're allowed to play against pros, as they classify us. I mean, their rules with the NCAA, it depends on the day of the week. But, problem with the college players, their average age, in the NCAA is around 24.
Right.
So, the USHL is a league that we've had some discussions with their commissioner, and there is a desire there. And I see that as something that will come at us probably sooner than the European opportunity, but who knows as we start to really open up discussions.
That's interesting, because I would tell you that Skip Prince and the USHL have more to win in that than you do.
Well, and that's certainly the old story for us old people. It's like the Continental League and the CFL, and playing back in the day there, should they have interacted at all? And the answer was no at that time. And we've got to get over that, John. I just think that hockey is growing in the U.S., and that's important to all of us that are involved in the game.
Well, and we just saw it, and we're going to see more of it tonight. International hockey at the junior level sells. I mean, and I'm not talking about necessarily just revenue streams, although revenue streams can be could be derived from this. It could be useful to the CHL or the Hockey Canada.
Right.
But yeah. I mean, there's a market for it, and if there's a market for it, you know, you'd be crazy to just ignore it, wouldn't you? You got to at least look at it.
Well, that's right, and I think through the negotiations of Bob Nicholson, you know, to have the World Junior coming back to Canada in 15, 17, 19, and 21 does a lot of things. One, as you just touched on, is exposing the game and just showing how exciting it is. And, it gives us some great opportunities in a number of areas here.
We only got a couple minutes here, but I wanted to get your comments on Brian Burke's news conference today, at which Mr. Burke, it was sort of in response to the fact that Burke released Colton Orr.
Put him on waivers.
Yeah. For the purpose of giving him his release.
No, he's going to play in the Marlies.
Well, okay. Well, to get rid of him.
Okay.
And then sort of pointed a finger at the game as the culprit here. That a Colton Orr can't play in this league anymore, and that other players are not stepping up and fighting the battles on behalf of a Colton Orr. Give me your general thoughts. I mean, I assume you've seen some quotes or heard something of what he had to say.
Yeah, I did. You know, just on the highlights of
right
of.
Were you shaking your head like I was, or do you understand this philosophy?
Well, I mean, I don't agree with the philosophy, quite frankly, and I think the game is evolving, as we know, away from a one-dimensional player and the like. I think it's important that we continue to move in that direction. We just saw the World Junior Tournament here. There wasn't one fight, and I don't think anyone was taking liberties, you know, on the star players any more than they would have if there was a couple of players that couldn't play the game and the like. So I don't subscribe to that theory at all, Bob.
And did you count how many people were complaining on their way out of the arena because there were no fights?
Yeah, and I think that's so important. And we have to use these experiences and others. I mean, you go to the Memorial Cup, look back to last year in Mississauga, not one fight throughout the entire event. We don't need it. And, you know, it's an area that we all know is part of a lot of issue for a lot of different reasons, and not least of which is changing the mindset of some of the people and some of our fans. So hopefully we can be successful.
Thank you, Mr. Branch, as always. We will see you soon. Safe trip back.
Well, thank you so much.
David Branch, the president of the Canadian Hockey League and commissioner of the OHL.
It would be, I can't believe he didn't promote the fact that CHL hockey's coming back to Sportsnet here next week. So he should be doing that, too.
Where's it been?
Oh, just the World Junior.
It is because the World Junior.
Yeah, so it's coming back next.
Okay.
And the game is going to be in Halifax to see the 17-year-old phenom Nathan MacKinnon. He's a very good player.
So I hear. I've not had a chance.
Claims he's not the next Crosby, but everybody says, boy, he sure looks good.
Is he 17? I thought he was younger. That was like
I think he's 17.
16.
Maybe. I don't know.
When we come back, Cecil Fielder was a great player for the Toronto Blue Jays for a number of years.
And the Detroit Tigers.
Well, and the Detroit Tigers, but we remember him as a Blue Jay. And, of course, he has a pretty high-profile kid named Prince. And it's been alleged that they have, that their relationship has been strained, maybe still is strained. Is it or isn't it? We're going to talk to Daddy when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. Thirteen minutes before the hour, McCowan and Shannon in our Toronto studios. It's Primetime, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius. In a high definition on Sportsnet. Here's a guy who needs no introduction to anybody who followed baseball at all during the 80s or 90s or today even. Among other things, the former first baseman of the Toronto Blue Jays. Here's Cecil Fielder. Cess, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
We're doing great. I understand you're coming up.
Yeah, I'll be in the city tomorrow. Matter of fact, going to the Ontario Blue Jays dinner tomorrow night, giving a little pep talk to the guys and I guess everybody else that's in the audience. So I'll be there tomorrow and we'll we'll have the function tomorrow evening.
Ontario Blue Jays, for those that aren't aware, is a pretty high-profile program. It's probably the top amateur program in this country. About, I think they have 8 players on Team Canada. Some 400 players have gone through that program and gone on to scholarships at U.S. colleges. That's pretty remarkable, wouldn't you say?
Well, it is. And, you know, a couple of the guys that have been big league players, like Pete Orr and Sean Hill, Adam Stern, Scott Thorman, just to name a few. But, you know, the organization, you know, is got that ring to it, the Ontario Blue Jays. So Paul Cartwright from Sports Celebrity Marketing has been in contact with me to come up there and speak to these kids and give them a good pep talk and hopefully get them to come down to play in my tournament this winter in Arizona. So hopefully
there you go.
We can make that happen.
So what's your memories of playing baseball here in Toronto?
Well, I mean, I had some good ones. I mean, you got to think back to, you know, that first year, 85, when I got called to the big leagues by Bobby Cox in July of 85. And we eventually went on to be the first Canadian team to get into the postseason and had an opportunity to beat Kansas City in the round before the World Series. So everything was gung-ho from the beginning. So I was pretty excited about it. And, you know, then it took me about 13 more years to get back to the playoffs. So, you know, that was a heck of an experience for me at that young of an age to have an opportunity to play on aside some of those guys, you know, from Jesse Barfield, Lloyd Mosby, Ernie Witt, George Bell, Willie Upshaw, Dalmaso Garcia, Tony Fernandez, Orge, Mullenix. I mean, I had a good group, and I was just fortunate enough to have a person like Bobby Cox believe that I can come up there and get a couple hits to try to help that team. So from the beginning, it was good. You know, later on, you know, as we shuffled to try to get more playing time, it became a little bit of a drag for me, you know, with such, you know, great talent that we had in Toronto and all the great things that my roommate Fred McGriff done at first base. It was kind of hard for me to get playing time. So, again, for me to get out of there and be able to go to Japan in 89 and work some things out and come back in 90 and have one of the 11th stellar season in Major League history to go aboard 50. So it was a good time for me at that point.
With Cecil Fielder, look, I've only got a couple minutes here. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about your relationship with your son Prince. And do you guys talk? Is the relationship solid now?
Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, we're doing some things, talking to each other a little bit, you know, texting back and forth. But
good.
Again, you know, all that right there is going to take care of itself. I mean, you know, there's nobody, and even himself or myself, could not mention how much time we spent together. How many good days we had together. So at the end of the day, you know, those things are going to take care of itself because, you know, time heals everything. I'm pretty sure that he has some daggers in him with him and me and his mother going through a divorce and him having a lot of pressure on himself to be the man of the house for his mother and me not being there and me not being around, you know, him as
sure.
much as he probably wanted me to be. But at the end of the day, man, you know, he's grown. You know, he has a family. He has 2 of my grandkids. So, again, you know, things are getting better. And, you know, we're just going to keep working on it.
Might as well cut to the chase. You can tell us. We're not going to tell anybody else where he's signing then.
Well, you know what? We were talking about that a little earlier, man. I mean, you know, I would like to see it. You know, I told him earlier I'd like to see him in a Toronto Blue Jay uniform. That would be a good fit. I mean, that will come full circle. But I just don't know if that's going to be able to happen. You know, now they're talking about the Washington Nationals.
Yeah, is that real, Seth?
Well, you know, it ain't real until it's done, you know.
That's right.
The way I look at it, you know, everybody can talk. You know, talk is cheap until you get in there and say you're going to make a deal. And that's the way you got to look at it. And I think that's the way, you know, him and himself, his agent, are looking at it. Scott Boras is just like, you know, everybody's talking the game, but somebody's got to walk the walk. And until that happens, then we just, everybody, he's wide open. So, you know, that last-minute person can come in there and make something happen. You just never know in negotiations or being a free agent how that's going to come take place.
Would you recommend to him that he stay in the National League?
Not really, because, you know, me personally, I don't care what league you're in. If you can hit, you're going to hit. And, you know, I think it's got to go with the right fit. You know, you got an opportunity now as a free agent to pick a team that you want to play for, and you need to pick the right fit, meaning that You got to see who's in the lineup. You got to check out the whole team. You don't want to go to a team that you're going to have to, you know, wait 5-6 years to try to have a chance to win. You want to be able to go in right now and make a difference. And I think you look at some of the teams that have been inquiring, the Nationals are definitely one of those teams. Texas Rangers, you know, would be definitely one of those teams.
Right.
You know, the Blue Jays, on their way up, that would be a great team to go sit in the lineup with him and Baptista. So you got to look at who's around you. And I think talking about, you know, hitters being more hitterish, that's a little hitter's language right there. You got to have guys around you to make those things happen. So I think, you know, just like he had the situation.
Seth, I hate to cut you, pal, but we're dead out of time. It's great to hear your voice again. Good health. Good night from Toronto.